Tom, there are a number of factors adding up. So there's the terrain, but if it was the daytime, I think you'd say, no problem going into this airport. I'd pay attention to the fact that there are hills out there. There's just the darkness and the fact that you're flying into the airport. And then there's the pilot and potential spatial disorientation doing the maneuvers. So let's just look at those two. Let's move Piseco to Kansas. There's nothing around potentially to hit, like find the most remote flat part of Kansas. If the airport was there, would you say that this pilot shouldn't even bother? Or yeah, the pilot should give it a try.
Well, first, I think you fairly accurately described Kansas, but I'm much more concerned about the spatial orientation issue here. It's easy, and with good moving maps and redundancy in the moving maps that the pilot has in this case, finding the terrain is the lesser of the problems that I'm concerned with. I'm much more concerned about making these maneuvers in extremely dark conditions, essentially by reference to instruments and kind of making it up as you go.
So you're less concerned than even about the black hole approach function, like, you know, getting too flat and low on the approach to the airport. It's more about the turns.
Well, the turns and the black hole approach, which could lead to judgment errors and eventually contribute to disorientation. I'm more concerned about the maneuvering that would be done to get lined up with the runway than once you'd be lined up with the runway in this case.
So I'm going to stick with you for just one more here. This pilot hasn't balled it up in an hour and a half flight in darkness up to this point. Why would they suddenly lose it because they were almost at the airport just before landing?
Because of maneuvering. At that point, you're not in cruise flight. He may have used an autopilot. There may have been an ability to use an autopilot in certain aspects of making this visual approach. But all of these options involve some version of making descending turns without outside references that you can rely upon.
Okay, descending turns without the references, there's sort of the nugget of danger that you're seeing. Kevin, you're going with option one, which actually was what my first thought when I was looking at this scenario, which is you're just going to enter a right downwind, line up and head for the runway. Probably you're on the left side of the airplane, the most potential for spatial disorientation and losing track of things. Why is that a reasonable?
Well, like you said before, I think that the fact that he's night current, when he departed on this flight, there weren't any major indications that he was less than comfortable flying at night. So he's done this before. He's made it the whole way there. He's got an autopilot. He can use the autopilot to fly a VFR traffic pattern if he wants to. Maybe even fly just a little bit wider than normal to allow some room for that sort of thing. And I like the idea of a PAPI because with a PAPI and runway lights, being able to be eyes out the window maneuvering at night to set up, to me, that's a normal night landing that you'd do any number of other places.
John.
So I'm going to take the counter on that. So everyone sitting around this table is instrument rated. Almost everyone's probably ATPs, CFIs and stuff. We're looking at a 600-hour non-instrument rated private pilot, which is a whole different risk factor. This approach, no matter which way you do it, whether you do the traffic pattern for 4 or 2-2, is really no different than circling off an instrument approach at night. And what do we always say is one of the most dangerous things that you can do in instrument flying is a circling approach. So I think for most of us, I think it may be reasonable to do this using the electronic guidance that's available. But for a 600-hour VFR-only private pilot, the risk just goes way off scale.
Kevin, back to you.
Just a quick little thing to build on the comparison to a circling approach at night. One of the things that you do when you're flying an IFR circling approach is you don't descend below that minimum descent altitude until you can make a continuous and normal descent to landing. This is something that I think can be applied to the VFR pattern at night where you're concerned about obstacles is when you arrive at pattern altitude, fly the maybe just a slightly wide downwind, fly maybe just a slightly extended downwind, and then don't descend out of that altitude until you've got a good look at the PAPI and you can descend on that visual glide path.
I'm going to say wide downwind on this one for either downwind is going to make you realize that all of that terrain warning gear on board is on and active because there's a big hill out there. Dave.
I'm going to say a couple of contradictory things. So first,
there's nothing new about that, Dave. But that's
I remember getting some good guidance when I was just starting flying, and it was night IFR mountains. It's like, okay, you can have one of those, but don't no more than one. You know, so this pilot's already kind of got two with night in the mountains. That's obviously an elevated danger. I think Tom is right on target about spatial disorientation being the primary danger here. But I went with option two, which is left downwind, because human nature being what it is, this pilot is here. He sees the airport. He sees the runway. I think in that situation, it's going to be really difficult to overcome the desire to land there. He's in contact with his friend on the ground. I mean, it's like the option of going home would be really, I think, beyond difficult. It's like I think that any pilot that's flown all the way there is going to give it a try. And if he's going to give it a try, I think the best way to avoid the spatial disorientation trap is to make left traffic completely standard. He's sitting on the left side of the airplane. He can keep the runway environment in sight during the entire traffic pattern and make a safe descent and landing. I don't think that's unreasonable in this situation.
Well, let me stick with you for a second, Dave. There's no PAPI for runway 22. So when that pilot's making the turn, it is a true black hole approach.
Right.
Lower time private pilot.
But he's got the runway in sight, he's got runway lights, and he's got the vertical guidance from the Garmin visual approach. So with the visual approach backing him up, to me that's as good as a two light PAPI.
Tom.
Well, you know, I like the idea of that Garmin visual approach. I use it myself a lot, but in this instance I see it as being almost an instrument maneuver to vector yourself onto this final approach in this glide path. And if you're a little high, if you misjudge it and you're a little high on glide path, or you misjudge it and you're a little low on that glide path when you are turning into final, what's that going to do to your temptations? You were talking really about temptation. You're there. I'm tempted to try it, so this is how I'm going to do it. How's that going to impact your control of the aircraft if you're a little high or a little low? Most of us are instructors. Most of us are IFR instrument instructors, and you probably, like me, see a lot of people that even though they have a lot of instrument experience, they have a lot of difficulty maintaining a glide path when hand flying the aircraft. I just think that it's just really setting the pilot up for a spatial disorientation event.
Kevin.
Just to build on that, I think one other concern I would have would be that you'd be asking the VFR pilot to do one of the more difficult parts of an instrument scan, which is watching the localizer and glide slope for all intents and purposes. That's what we're talking about here. Watching that as well as eyes out the window towards the airport. And that's why I don't like the glide path as much as I like the PAPIs, because the PAPIs allows them to be more heads up out the window and is less demanding of proper instrument scan and transition from instrument to visual flight.
JP.
Yeah, Jeff, you bring an interesting psychological point to this, because we're going to be flying this pattern either 4 or 2-2 if we go that route, with all kinds of alarms going off, terrain, obstacle ahead. And we are in a black hole, and we can't see anything, and we're here. That's very disconcerting. I've been in that position before when it's we've got in Birmingham, we've got a hill that we cross over that it's normal an approach to get that. I remember the first time I got that, I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Everything was fine, but that's going to be a distraction. Something that we didn't mention that was taught to me a long time ago when I was a VFR-only pilot, and even to this day, if it is a clear night, if it is wonderful weather at night, I load up an instrument approach. I load up an instrument approach just so I will have the points in there. I will have some level of guidance, and I'm flying at VFR, but I just like to have that backing me up. And that was an option that many of us used prior to the 750s and 650s coming out with that visual option. We would load up, you know, an ILS or an RNAB just to give us some idea of what's going on. You have an updated database and you have that. That's going to give you the terrain clearance there, and it's going to be just a confidence builder.
And I think that was part of the motivation for those visual approaches potentially with vertical guidance is, well, rather than have VFR-only pilots fumbling for the instrument approach, some of which have a final approach course not exactly aligned with the runway, and you've got, here's just a super simple, like, it's a visual, and it won't give you vertical guidance if, you know, there are obstacles out there, and it won't go past a certain distance if there are obstacles out there, and it's just super, super simple. I want to get back to that, but you brought something up that I want to share, which is I, of course, during the development of these, we fly them in the sim. I took it in the sim, and I was actually over the lake the long distance. I thought, you know, option 3 would make a lot of sense. I could descend long straight in on the Pappy. This will be great. Maneuvered over the lake just fine. Started going down on the Pappy just fine, and I have my iPad and a real GTN simulator like locked up. As everything started to turn yellow and red, and I started getting terrain, turn it off, terrain, turn it off, terrain, I'm thinking to myself, there is no way I would ever actually do this in the real world, even though I've landed in both directions on it both times. But you're right, it is shockingly distracting. How that comes up, even though that's supposed to be for safety. And it really did make me question, like, my decision and sanity. Now, Sarah, you are really split. I think you can really feel what's going on for this pilot, right? 1 or 5, get out of here. Help me understand why that split for you.
Well, one thing that I think about a lot in this scenario is kind of something that we do in the backcountry. You know, landing off airport, we generally try not to introduce new techniques or new strategies in an unfamiliar situation. If you've always been landing a certain way on a particular location, then you continue doing that. I think that adding the complexity of trying to incorporate a visual approach or instrument maneuver with technology that you haven't done at night can be extremely challenging. That being said, this pilot has been to this airport multiple times before and likely landed on probably both runway 22 and 4 before. The way I see it, entering the pattern and going into the right downwind for runway 4 would be the best option because it's probably something they've done before. In my experience, it's been actual experience in a scenario that accounts for more than overall experience. Somebody might be an incredibly experienced instrument pilot or an incredibly experienced VFR pilot, but experience in an exact location with an exact aircraft, to me, is just as important as having any of the other skills that you would need to fly any of the other options.
So you're saying, if I can clarify here, you're saying that don't let the 650 hours distract you so much on this. This pilot knows the airport, grew up in the area, has been in times, has been in there in this airplane at the end of this flight using this equipment, just not in the dark. So it's just a one element gain. And that's why you're willing to maybe give it a try if you're feeling confident about it. Did I sum that up? Well,
yes,
enough.
That's
what
correct.
You're saying, John.
So I took a more analytical approach to looking at this flight, also, and deciding whether it was even worth departing. The FAA FAST team, a plug for that, has a flight risk assessment tool, which is basically an Excel spreadsheet. We could share it in the resources or wherever.
Yeah, we can add it to the bonus resources, we call it, in the
right.
Hangar. So we'll put that
so,
in there.
So it goes through the entire flight kind of along the lines of the I'm safe and PAVE checklists, and it assigns certain points for different conditions. Like you get 4 points for a flight will occur after work, 5 points at night, so many points for mountain, so many deduction points for not instrument rated. Okay, and if you just plug all those numbers in, the total score comes up on this is 25 points, which is solidly in the red for a private pilot with more than 100 hours in type. So it's solid red.
Dave.
You know, I wanted to get back to JP's point about using an instrument approach to back up a VFR approach and landing. And essentially, it seems to me that that's exactly what the pilot is doing here, you know, making left traffic to 2-2.
Well, let me challenge you on that, because the pilot has used the visual approach feature before, and there's a PAPI, which granted there's is only going to give obstacle clearance out 3.2 nautical miles, but it's beyond that, like, the pilot has all sorts of gear on board to be like, hey, I'm not going to hit anything. Why would you do a pattern instead of, you know, setting yourself up and then having this nice long straight in, particularly the visual one, where you can make sure that you're clear of obstacles until you're within the range of the PAPI, and then you can go all visual and it's just follow the lights into there you are.
Well, you said yourself that PAPI only gives you guidance within 3.4 nautical miles.
Obstacle clearance.
Yeah.
But it's like the drawback to runway 4 and making right traffic to runway 4 is that you're more likely to lose. You have to look cross cockpit. You're more likely to lose sight of the runway environment, and that's why the left traffic was preferable to me.
Tom,
well, if I were using the PAPI for part of my strategy for getting in here, if you're flying a downwind, you won't see the PAPI really until you're halfway through base leg. I mean, you'll see that white rectangle of runway slowly slide past, and it's going to go back behind you, and you're making this descending turn over the, or maybe even attempting to fly a level turn over the lake to acquire the PAPI, but you won't actually see the PAPI for any vertical guidance until you're well into your base leg, maybe even almost turning final. So you really can't depend on that to help you with your orientation until you're already lined up.
JP.
You know, the more I listen to this, the more I think about a scenario that I would be in as a flight instructor. If I had a student that, even if they had 600 plus hours and they had some nice hardware in the airplane, and they said, hey, I'm going to do this flight, and it's going to be at night, and it's going to be into this particular airport, I don't know if I would be really comfortable saying, hey, go for it. This is something that you can do. I think I would feel probably more this way. Hey, if you're going to go in there, let's not do it this time, but I'll go with you at night, and we'll do it together, and we'll take a look at this. So we'll get comfortable, and you'll be comfortable the next time you have this opportunity to go visit your friends, or perhaps I go with you on this particular trip and we do it together.
Tom?
If it were a clear night and you had the moon reflecting over the snow, I think it would be substantially different. I would have a substantially different response to this because you would have some sort of horizon reference outside and some sort of ground contact through it. But adding that overcast and making it a completely dark whole airport, I think is what put me over the edge of saying I just wouldn't try it.
Kevin brought up the autopilot. How much does the autopilot potentially factor into this? Because if we're talking about spatial disorientation, well, the autopilot's not going to be disoriented. The pilot knows the gear on board. Couldn't they use the autopilot for a number 3 or 4 and get lined up? And now the visual approach we know wouldn't give you the glide path if it had some level of safety. Like, it, we just won't generate it because it's generating out of a database. The PAPI, clearly, you've got that inner zone of 3.4 nautical miles where it's safe. Beyond that, you've got the gear to figure it out. Does the autopilot change the equation here in using it? Sarah?
So based on the experience of the pilot, from what I've read, this pilot has a lot of experience flying at night. They've probably gotten used to flying on instruments despite not being instrument rated. That being said, the thing that concerns me the most is not necessarily the spatial disorientation. It's the fact that they have to vector themselves or find a clear approach path. I've actually tried to do that myself, and I've tried doing off-route navigation to join instrument approaches in very mountainous areas and non-radar environments, and that can be very challenging too. There's a lot of CFIT that's happened because people were trying to vector themselves onto an approach path. So even though they might have an autopilot trying to figure out, okay, I'm at cruise altitude, how do I set myself up for a non-published procedure to create my own procedure to an airport, to me seems very challenging and sketchy. And that's why my backup option was to say, okay, if this isn't working out and you start descending and it doesn't feel comfortable, you're not comfortable with the scenario, it's not something you've experienced before, then okay, it's time to bug out and go home at that time.
I feel like, and you start descending, there's no way it's not comfortable unless you shouldn't be up flying. You have no nerves at all in this one. I want to pick up on something you said there, Sarah, because it's interesting and it goes into this whole visual approach feature and how potentially to use it. What is difficult about self-vectoring? You said you've practiced that and it's been difficult. So can you dive into that a little bit? Why is that hard? I mean, there's a map, you're here, you're going there. What's the challenge?
A lot of instrument approaches, and not to get away from the VFR portion of this, a lot of instrument approaches have an interesting origin point where you have to fly somewhere that's 20 or 30 miles away, follow a very specific path inbound because of the rising terrain or the geography. This pilot is looking at a VFR sectional with a very basic topographical map that may or may not give the level of detail required to kind of create their own approach. And just by looking at the sectional in general, as I look at this terrain coming in, you'd have to correctly identify terrain in very close proximity to other terrain to correctly navigate your way into it. So for me, it's just too much going on to try to successfully create your own instrument approach when coming down from a cruise altitude.
That makes sense. That definitely makes sense. One of the things, though, couldn't you use, you know, the minimum elevation figure, right? I mean, I'm just going to stay at a particular altitude. You got 22 miles for the visual either way and a glide path on one. Is there an error in that kind of thinking? Isn't that leveraging technology for what it could be used for? I'm actually sort of surprised that we had no takers on either one of those approaches. JP.
Yeah, I've been thinking about if this were me, how I would handle this, even if this were me back in the VFR only days, and mm-hmm. I'm trying to get in here, and the weather's not particularly bad. It is concerning that when you have an overcast and it's dark and you don't have a lot of lights on the ground, if any at all, you're essentially, even though technically you are VFR, it's really an IFR kind of mission that you're doing. Legally, you're VFR, but we have a lot of features that are taken away. That said, what I would probably have done, and it's fully legal to do this, is I would load up the RNAV, and that would be my backup that would take me directly in. There's an RNAV-4 that would keep me clear of the terrain. I would be mindful of those altitudes and fly at VFR.
So, JP, I'm going to throw down the gauntlet because I can see that you have the approach chart up.
Yeah.
That approach is NA at night.
Oh, well, there you go.
are you still going to do it? Are you going to stick with door number one? Or are you like, oh, wait, no, never mind.
Now, well, I will. You know what?
It's NA at night, but there's a PAVI.
Well, here's the thing. It's NA at night, but, you know, terrain is... It's going to give me some protection as I get to that final approach course. I mean, those mountains, day or night, it's protecting me from. So I'm still going to use that as my guidance to get me around that terrain and make me feel better. It's going to make me feel better than navigating. I'm like, I don't think it's over there, and I'm looking at the iPad and so forth.
Right, but you're talking what you're going to do as JP, and yeah. Any of us can talk about what we would do as you know, with all the qualifications around the table. We need to think about it from the perspective of what this pilot is going to do given his equipment and technology. So it's like, you know, back to the scenario. I guess we still none of us have persuaded each other of the the error of our ways. But I just think that it's like it's a whole different, you know, your point about the you know, bringing an instructor along and the instructor is going to be instrument rated and things like that. Those are interesting points, but helping this guy in this situation here, you know, that's the primary concern, and it's interesting we've reached such different conclusions.
Well, yeah, but you still think that this pilot in this situation could in fact fly the pattern and it would be fine. You would still say if he texted you from the cockpit and was like, Dave, what do I do? And you'd be like, yeah,
well,
sure,
fly. When JP was talking about the instructor's perspective, you know, it's like, yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Instructor's perspective is totally different from the individual who's taken this on for himself.
Yep. So let me say then for the two people who suggested this pilot go home, John, if it was John Krug flying this in this Cardinal, this gear, would you do it? And what technique would you use?
I would definitely be more inclined to do it, and probably the left traffic to 2-2. given that you could keep the runway in sight on the left side, and probably do some sort of figure out a way to intercept that vertical guidance or the VFR approach off the 750. But I'd be kind of spring-loaded to pop out of there if things didn't look good.
So even with your level of experience,
yeah,
it's feeling sketchy, and you're still using the vertical guidance as a sort of pseudo-PAPI, because there's no PAPI for runway 22.
As a cross-check.
Yeah. Tom, what about us? Tom Turner going into this airport? You doing it?
Well, I'd kind of go along with JP that I'd load up the approach if it were me going into this, and I would be flying, even though it's NA at night. It's used as a supplementary device for the visual procedure. If I didn't have that option, if I were a VFR only pilot and I was not trained on how to do that sort of thing, if I were going to go into it myself, I might try the visual glide path. That would be the way that I would tend to do it. Stay high, get aligned, go straight in at it.
Kevin.
I think in an instrument rated pilot, somebody that's able to fly these procedures, if you're going in VFR, and I do this all the time, flying at night VFR, absolutely I will fly the instrument approach even if it says NA at night. And for me, the biggest thing to keep in mind there is if an instrument approach says NA at night, almost always, as far as I know, it's because there are obstacles in the visual segment of the approach. But by the time you get to that visual segment, in this case, it sounds like we have a PAPI that we can be looking at. So for me, I would be quite confident that I would be able to get in and fly the approach and safely land without crashing into any trees or anything.
Sarah.
One thing that I would say as an instrument instructor and just a CFI in general is I would never encourage a VFR-only pilot to attempt any part of an instrument procedure. They might have had the required 3 hours of instrument training to get their private, but do they know how to read a chart? If they misread something or a segment of it, that could potentially put them in danger. So I would highly recommend against any VFR pilot attempting any type of an instrument procedure, especially at night. That being said, I mean, just looking at the RNAV approach there, you can see that the approach actually starts out pretty far to the southeast where that lower terrain is. My concern too is that the minimum safe altitude in the area is around 3,600 feet, at least in this sector. They have to somehow get from 3,600 feet, they have to descend 2,000 feet in order to get to that airport, and it's pretty much a lot of guesswork or using the technology they have on board. So for me, the best thing that they can do is to stick to something they've done before and keep this as a VFR-only procedure. And if they cannot keep it as a VFR-only procedure with the maneuvering that they have done before at this airport, then at that point, it's time to go home.
That VFR-only procedure, that kind of brings me back to this visual approach feature in the GTN, and I've talked with Doug Stewart about this, who feels like non-instrument rated pilots should forget that exists. And yet, on the flip side, I think we've talked about this, Dave, where you're like, this is awesome. This is a great feature. Do VFR-only pilots have any business using that feature at night in low conditions? Sarah?
And I think they do. I think that it's a great tool. It can definitely help when you're going into an unfamiliar airport. But one thing I will caution is that it should not be used because they're not comfortable with it without it. If they are comfortable doing it without that technology, then sure, use it for situational awareness. But if you're using the technology to get yourself into a situation where you're not quite comfortable with it, but that you would be willing to do it if you had that technology available, then to me, that's not a good decision to make.
But to the point about the visual approach, it's like, to me, the long straight in with the constant descent is an IFR maneuver. You know, the way doing it at night in a black hole, that's it might as well be IMC. So that's why it is unappealing to me, and that's why I like the left hand traffic pattern that keeps the runway environment in sight.
Kevin,
we've talked a lot about the glide path aspect of the visual approach that you're allowed to load up in your GTN. One of the things that is also really helpful about that is that it aligns you up with the runway. And depending on where you're going, that part of that tool can be really helpful to make sure that, especially at night, you're lining up with an actual runway at the airport you're landing at and not a strip of streetlights or something like that that are adjacent to the airport.
Tom.
Well, I was just thinking that using that technology, which is, I think, a great addition to safety here, still requires a certain amount of training and guidance. It wouldn't be the sort of thing that I would hope a VFR-only pilot would decide to figure out on his or her own, certainly while under this actual, in this actual scenario. You might go try it in really good weather during the daytime and see how it works out. The pilot in the scenario has used the vertical guidance, the vertical glide path in the past, but combining that with everything else that's going on here just sounds like taking on an awful lot.
You know, this whole scenario sounds to me like one of those little voice flights, you know, where the little voice is talking to you in the cockpit. And this pilot actually kind of made the decision not to go early on and then went back and was like, well, wait a minute, is it really sketchy? So the pilot convinced themselves, I can give this a try. And then if it doesn't feel right, I'll just turn around. But as Dave pointed out, that's incredibly hard to do when you're 7 miles from the airport and your friend is waiting on the ground. So I'd say overall, there's really nothing wrong with going, but you want to go with the mindset of the skepticism that the conditions have to talk you into continuing rather than having the hope that growing doubt will talk you out of it.